So I was all ready to get up here and tell you all about the prophetic voice today, but I'm not sure that I need to anymore. Because in these readings today and hearing our choir, and yesterday, we saw it. We saw people claiming their voice and speaking and singing and marching and telling their truth, a truth that runs counter to much of what culture tells us. That truth is that women are as important as anyone else, that our efforts must be intersectional, that is, if they do not include the dazzling array of identities and experiences of all people, then we have failed. The truth that a government that does not work for all of its people is no true government at all. Other truths, too. Dozens of us from this congregation marched with 60,000 of our best friends in Oakland and some 4 million people around the country and around the world in hundreds of cities on all 7 continents. Thank you, researchers in Antarctica. Who apparently staged a 30-person march across about 100 feet of ice and snow. The numbers are bigger if you include the penguins. And all of these 4 million people did this not merely to protest a person or a government, but to lift something up, to support women, to empower people, to promote an agenda that works for all people. And this is the very heart of prophecy, to speak unpopular truths, to call all of us to account for the ideals we have failed to hold up, to urge us all to do better. I couldn't have asked for a better illustration of this thing we're talking about this month, prophecy. In fact, it occurred to me last night that the only thing that I might have done better is to not have me be the preacher today. That is, to lift up women's voices instead. But rather than suggest this to Kristen, to my wife and co-minister, for fear she might just think I'm trying to get out of writing a sermon, instead I am preaching, and I wanted to take time to lift up the voices of women. And I thought one way to do that very quickly and very powerfully is to say some of the best signs from marches all over the world that I saw. So thank you, BuzzFeed. Here they are, just a few of the thousands and thousands. Number one, now you've pissed off Grandma. Which, I don't know, my grandma was pissed off way before this, but... Number two, I'm so angry, this was a stitching project, I'm so angry I stitched this just so I could stab something 3,000 times. Another one, an Audre Lorde quote, I am deliberate and afraid of nothing. From one young Oakland marcher, boys rock, girls rock, the end. Another, science is real. And another, if you take away my birth control, I'll just make more feminists. Another, my great-grandmother didn't escape Warsaw for this. Girls just want to have fun, demental rights. And what might, perhaps not the most powerful, but the two that spoke most to me personally, I want to share my two very favorites with you. So bad, even introverts are here. And from one very young marcher, I love naps, but I stay woke. And there were thousands more, many of them more pointed and with even more weight, but these spoke to me. Others, I'm sure, spoke very deeply to you. So for my own ventures into prophecy today, I'm thinking of the word unacceptable. And were I not in the pulpit right now, I'd be tempted to add a more colorful word into the middle of that, un-something acceptable. And this is what prophets do. They turn our faces towards what is unacceptable and call it that. And I think we are deep in the face of many things I find unacceptable and no quick end in sight. These last few months have only highlighted and brought ever more to our attention truths about our society we would rather not face, that we are, all of us, too willing to live with a fair amount of oppression, even evil, in return for maintaining a status quo that works well for some at the cost of others. And I don't see our new president as a cause, but rather a symptom. A symptom of a culture that prefers reality TV to reality. A symptom of a people, myself most definitely included, who worry about things like climate change, but not enough to actually change the things that would slow or reverse it. A people who are more comfortable with our privilege than with the idea of real justice. A culture that prefers to affirm that all lives matter so that we never have to face the reality that all lives don't matter equally, not in our culture as it exists right now. So here in this congregation, we say Black Lives Matter to point to the truth that it is not the case that Black lives matter as much as white lives, not yet, not in this society, and also that brown lives and trans lives and female lives, gay lives, immigrant lives, Muslim lives similarly matter less. And we point to this and call it what it is, unacceptable. This is prophecy. In church circles, we speak of the prophetic voice of a prophetic sermon. In past months, Kristen and I and the other preachers we've welcomed into this pulpit have said some prophetic words, calling all of us to wake up to the reality around us and do better. But we have a lot more waking up to do, waking up from the sleepy lives of privilege that allow us to either not know or not care about injustice. And so it is to our modern-day prophets that I look for hope and inspiration and truth. To Elisa Chavez, to Patrice Cullors, to Ta-Nehisi Coates, to so many more. But even that isn't easy for us always, is it? Religious liberals have been wary of prophets. We lionize Martin Luther King Jr. even as we simultaneously sanitize his legacy for our comfort. We support the ideals of protesters, but not their methods, which is a popular way of undercutting real movement for change. We doubt our own voices. Who am I to speak up? Who are we to judge? What power do we have anyway? I give you the words of Dan McCannon, the Emerson Chair at Harvard Divinity School, one of my seminary professors. He's a great scholar of the American liberal and radical traditions, and he wrote just several years ago that this is a time for prophets. The earth and her people cry out in anguish, in indignation, and yet still in hope. In times like these, prophets must speak loudly, clearly, with many voices. But we who are called to prophetic witness today face our own set of obstacles. Religious liberals in particular have so often been offended and appalled by the prophets of conservative Christianity that we silence ourselves rather than risk sounding like them. Because we cherish the American experiment in religious freedom, we may worry that public witness in the name of faith could violate the separation of church and state. Our respect for the personal convictions of others may cause us to recoil from the harsh and denunciatory language favored by biblical prophets. Drawing on a long tradition of openness to culture, we may find it hard to adopt the critical stance of those prophets, even as we see glaring injustices right in front of us. Thus ends his words. But I think that we can do this. As we know, our government is already at work to dismantle so much that matters, to take away affordable health care and the arts, basic civil rights, clean air and water protection, so much more. But we can make our prophetic voices heard in the streets as we did yesterday, in the halls of power as we must tomorrow. We can do work directly in our communities, as this congregation has for a long time, feeding the hungry, housing those who lack shelter, welcoming the immigrant. And in our everyday lives, too, our prophetic voices are needed. What does prophecy look like in everyday life, you might ask? How can I be prophetic? And so I offer a small story from one of my ministry mentors, the Reverend Meg Riley, senior minister of the Church of the Larger Fellowship, an online congregation of Unitarian Universalists. This happened in her life just before Christmas. She writes, "At Weight Watchers Today, which in St. Paul, Minnesota, where she lives, is an overwhelmingly white group of people, we were processing stressful events for the month and how they might contribute to overeating. People were talking about making Christmas cookies, visiting in-laws, etc. I decided to be real. I said, the most stressful event in my life this month will be the day that the president-elect is named as our next president. I know this isn't a partisan space, but I need to say that if you voted for him, my own kid has already been assaulted and called names, as have many other people of color, GLBT people, and Muslims. And if that appalls you, I certainly hope you will speak out about it, because you elected the man who inspired the tremendous rise in hate crimes right here in the Twin Cities and everywhere else in the country. And I bring this up here because Christmas doesn't stress me out. This does. And I overeat when I'm stressed." Several people looked away uncomfortably, but others began talking about their own stress since the election. This will be one of my forms of resistance, to bring what is true into spaces that are trying to ignore it. And thus ends her words. This may seem like a little thing, perhaps, just a small room of people in the Twin Cities. Is telling truth to a room of people at Weight Watchers prophecy? Yes. It is when we speak the truths that would be easy to turn away from. Because prophecy is about these truths and about facing things we would rather turn away from, about seeking real justice rather than convenience, about acknowledging that suffering anywhere is suffering everywhere, about fully claiming that interconnected web we so often speak of. And it's also, and I leave you with this, about offering hope in a broken world. Elisa Chavez's poem, in such powerful language, points to the very real dangers in our country, but also to resistance, to hope, to possibility. So remember that prophecy is not all doom and gloom. Those prophets of the Hebrew Bible didn't just point out everything that was wrong or how the people had turned from their God. They also offered hope, a chance to return to better ways. Because prophecy is not merely about speaking unpopular truth or opposing powerful forces in our society. It is speaking the truths that no one else will speak. It is calling down the mighty, yes, and about calling us out when we are wrong. And it can also be the simple act of offering hope when hope is hard to find. I like to think of the prophet Ezekiel, some of whose words were said at my own ordination service. He writes of the wheel within a wheel. He has these amazing visions of things he sees. He calls his people to account for the things they have done wrong. And he also is commanded to speak a word of hope. Some of the most famous words are his of speaking of new life rising from dry bones, that even from the least promising set of circumstances, good things can come. So today I ask you to find your inner prophet, to use your voice or your keyboard or your markers to amplify your message in the streets and in the world, in the room at Weight Watchers. We will be there. We will take the actions we must to follow our hearts and our faith. We will be the ones to say, this is unacceptable, and we can do better together.